Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia on the 9th of January 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another show. My name's Hereward Fenton, and I'm very pleased to be bringing you 2 hours of original and, we hope, insightful commentary on things that are happening around the world in Australia, and things that are relevant to questions of deep importance for humanity, for civilization, for democracy, to use a word that's been, you know, much diminished by its misuse. But I do believe that a democracy, in the sense of the original meaning of that term, going back to the ancient Greeks, meaning rule of the people, or the people ruling themselves, is a valid and noble goal to be working towards in any society. I think, unfortunately, you know, the meanings of words change in context, and democracy has come to be understood in context of what we see in countries that call themselves democracies in the modern world. And in fact, what these countries are, what the system really is it's representative democracy, where you have parties and individuals who claim to represent the people. But the ability of that system to actually really represent the people is extremely limited by certain factors, such as there are usually only 2 major parties, sometimes a 3rd minor one, such as we have in Australia, where we have Conservative, Liberal Party, Labour Party, left-wing Liberal, and the Greens being the major 3rd party now that holds the balance of power. And at different times in history, that, you know, that third force has been different, and it sometimes leans in different directions. But to suggest that the 2 major parties could somehow sum up all the diversity of potential views within the community, within society, is ridiculous. And then at another level, to think that the individuals who become, you know, the leaders of these parties can somehow summarize what the party is all about, again, is another leap of faith. And then, of course, the problem with the two-party system is that when you have, you know, 51% who want one government, then the 49% get ignored. And that's ridiculous too. That's not democracy. Democracy is the people managing their own affairs, the people running their own lives. So we don't have that. But I do believe we are working towards it. I do believe that it is a goal, and it's a worthwhile goal. And I think some of the people who are saying these days, well, you know, we don't even like democracy, we're going to throw it out, probably, I think, need to really consider what the semantics are, what the meanings of the words are, and what the concepts behind them are, because we really do need to get back to a more pure understanding of what words mean. I believe that's a very important step in kind of clearing the obfuscation that's developed in all forms of political discourse in our world. Anyway, that's just a little digression. I'd like to talk in today's show about some issues that have sort of popped up today. What I've noticed, a lot of the people who listen to this show, of course, are familiar with Alex Jones, and a lot of people are talking about Alex Jones's appearance in CNN, on CNN, on a very big show. And, of course, Alex Jones being a huge figure in media, with at least 1.5 million people listening to his show, it's not surprising that CNN thinks, well, we need to, you know, get this guy up in front of the camera to address the specific issue of the petition to have the TV presenter Piers Morgan deported. But of course, they would have known what to expect in getting Alex Jones on mainstream, you know, CNN program, confronting someone who is basically the anathema to everything that that Alex Jones espouses. I think it was a setup, more or less from the beginning, to be a kind of a prize fight, and probably with the aim of making Mr. Jones look ridiculous. And you know, some people have said, indeed, he did look ridiculous, and have said it's an embarrassment. And you know, many people seem to have an extremely negative view on that. Now, what I find interesting about this, and the way people look at these types of conflagrations that occur in the media, is that it's always focused on people's personalities. And when we focus on people's personalities, we completely lose sight of the substantive issues. And this is what I found has happened. Classic example with this whole business about Alex Jones going on CNN. Because, you know, many people think, oh, he was obnoxious, he was rude, he was talking over the top. And that's all they think about. All they think about is that he's damaged his reputation. He's damaged the credibility of all the people who follow him. And yet, you know, I watched that video, and I agree, his personality is abrasive, and he was rude, indeed. But, you know, I really don't think we're talking about, you know, Sunday afternoon tea with your aunt here. You know, when we're talking about going on CNN, the pinnacle of corporate television, an organization which has been ruthlessly engaged in propaganda and which uses ruthless techniques of psychological manipulation in order to perpetuate the views of the corporate oligarchies and the elites who run the planet. I think the idea that we need to adhere to some very, very quaint idea of manners and politeness is actually quite ridiculous. I mean, I understand it. I appreciate it. And I understand how people feel about it. But I think there's a lack of a grasp of what we're actually dealing with here, and of the gravity of what we're dealing with the media. And I say this to you as someone who does not completely agree with Alex Jones. Even on the issue of guns, I'm not 100% in agreement with Alex Jones on the gun issue. Because I think there's a tendency with Alex and many people who follow his line of reasoning to think that, you know, simply having access to these guns is going to provide that level of defense against the ultimate threat of a tyrannical totalitarian government. But there is another possibility, and this is quite realistic, which is that those who wish to foment destruction and anarchy and a breakdown of civilization actually want the guns to be out there, and they want people to be killing each other. They want this to occur because this is traditionally how the financial elites run things and make money, is through this sort of conflict. And of course, in this case, this would be something quite massive. This would be perhaps a civil war in the United States. But as we all know, those who win out in these types of conflicts are always the financial elites. It's happened again and again and again. And making weapons freely available is just perhaps a stepping stone, a way of creating the sort of conflict that will actually further their ends. But that doesn't mean I'm pro-gun regulation and restrictions on weapons either. I'm just critiquing the whole thing. Of course, I don't trust the government to have the complete control and access to lethal weapons. But then again, I also know that the government, through the military, has access to weapons that are so far beyond what even people in the United States can get on the street, that they can easily be outgunned. They can easily be outgunned by nuclear weapons. You know, if the government really wants to, they can just pull out the nukes. So does that mean that we should be able to buy nukes as well, you know, at your local gun shop? Should I be able to buy a DU shell? And these are, I believe, important questions. And these are substantive questions that I think would be worthwhile discussing. But unfortunately, the discussions always end up going down the track of the personality. You know, I don't like Alex Jones because he screams and shouts. And, you know, I don't like Piers Morgan because he's some stuck-up, you know, snooty, you know, representative of the elite. And we don't really talk about what we want. So I actually believe that we need to get the discussion more in the direction of thinking about what we want, where we want to go, and an understanding of history, I believe, will help us recognize that violence will never be the type of revolution that we want. Will have to be a peaceful revolution, because if it is a violent revolution, it will inevitably lead to a cycle of violence and repression and then retribution, generation after generation after generation, which is what we already have. So in some ways, I sympathize with those who are critical of the position that Alex takes. But I just wish we could get the discussion back to the real issues, the philosophical questions, the agendas that we would like to see followed, the agendas that we have, and the future that we would like to see for our society. And I'm hoping to get some guests on actually next week to have a bit more of a debate on this and to sort of toss some of these ideas around, because I think it's just a really interesting subject once you strip away the irrelevancies from it and you start to think, yeah, well, what, you know, let's think about weapons. Let's actually think about the fact that this is a giant corporate industry, one of the most profitable of all, is the manufacture of weapons and ammunition. And someone's making a whole lot of money out of all of this. And whether it's, you know, the government, or whether it's people in the community who are buying weapons, or whether it's, you know, foreign governments, armies, revolutionary groups, it doesn't matter. They win out every way you cut it. But where they don't win out is when you follow the path of peace. If you follow the path of peace and reason and rationality in order to communicate and to create the destiny, to create the future, to be the change that you want to see, that's very, very different. And that's where I want to get the discussion. That's where I want to focus. With Truth News Radio Australia, we'll be right back after this break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life, throwing strife.
Hi, welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. great to be with you today. Well, following from my previous rant there about the two sides to the debate about guns and the potential that there is a much worse problem down the track with an armed population who have to come up against the extreme high-tech, extremely well-funded resources of the military-industrial complex. And as an example of that, I've actually got an article here by Naomi Wolf. And, of course, Naomi Wolf is a left-wing feminist writer, but who has developed a penchant for liberty and the opposition of fascism, and a real understanding, I think, on a deep level about the importance of freedom and the freedom of the individual. Of course, she is Jewish by descent, and her family taught her many things about what happened during the Holocaust. So I always find it very interesting when someone like Naomi Wolf comes forward as being such a strong critic of the policies of the current administration, which in the US, which is very perceived as being liberal, which is perceived as being supportive of the left-wing intelligentsia. But what I've noticed is that Naomi Wolf has remained critical through the Bush years and now into the Obama years. She has kept her eye on the ball. So let me just read to you from this article here, The Coming Drone Attack on America, dated from the 22nd of December 2012. I'll just read to you some excerpts from the article. People often ask me in terms of my argument about the 10 steps that mark the descent to a police state or a closed society, at what stage we are. I'm sorry to say that with the importation of what will be tens of thousands of drones by both US military and by commercial interests into US airspace, with a specific mandate to engage in surveillance and with the capacity for weaponization, which is due to begin in earnest at the start of the new year, it means that the police state is now officially here. In February of this year, Congress passed the FAA Reauthorization Act with its provision to deploy fleets of drones domestically. Jennifer Lynch, an attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, notes that this followed a major lobbying effort, a huge push by the defense sector to promote the use of drones in American skies. 30,000 of them are expected to be in use by 2020. Some as small as hummingbirds, meaning that you won't necessarily see them tracking your meeting with your fellow activists, with your accountant or your congressman, or filming your cruising of the bars, or your assignation with your lover, as its video gathering whirs. Others will be as big as passenger planes. Business-friendly media stress their planned abundant use by corporations. Police in Seattle have already deployed them. An unclassified U.S. Air Force document reported by CBS expands on this unprecedented and unconstitutional step, one that formally brings the military into the role of controlling domestic populations on U.S. soil, which is the bright line that separates a democracy from a military oligarchy. The U.S. Constitution allows for the deployment of National Guard units by governors who are answerable to the people. But this system is intended, as is posse comitatus, to prevent the military from taking action aimed at U.S. citizens domestically. The Air Force document explains that the Air Force will be overseeing the deployment of its own military surveillance drones within the borders of the US, that it may keep video and other data it collects with these drones for 90 days without a warrant, and will then retroactively determine if the material can be retained, which does away, for good, with the Fourth Amendment in these cases. While the drones are not supposed to specifically conduct non-consensual surveillance on specifically identified US persons, according to the document, the wording allows for the domestic military surveillance of non-specifically identified people, that is, a group of activists or protesters, and it comes with the important caveat, also seemingly wholly unconstitutional, that it may not target individuals unless expressly approved by the Secretary of Defense. In other words, the Pentagon can now send a domestic drone to hover outside your apartment window, collecting footage of you and your family, if the Secretary of Defense approves it. Or it may track you and your friends and pick up audio of your conversations on your way, say, to protest, or vote, or talk to your representative. If you are not specifically identified, and indeed that is a determination that is so vague as to be meaningless. So, what happens to those images and that audio? Distribution of domestic imagery can go to various government agencies without your consent, and that imagery can, in that case, be distributed to various government agencies, and it may also include your most private moments and most personal activities. The authorized collected information may incidentally include US persons or private property without consent. In some records that were released by the Air Force recently, under their rules, they are allowed to fly drones in public areas and record information on domestic situations. And that was a statement from Jennifer Lynch of the Electronic Frontier Foundation on CBS. This document accompanies a major federal push for drone deployment in the United States, accompanied by federal policies to encourage law enforcement agencies to obtain and use them locally, as well as by federal support for their commercial deployment. That is to say, now HSBC, Chase, Halliburton, etc., can have their very own fleets of domestic surveillance drones. The FAA recently established a more efficient process for local police departments to get permits for their own squadrons of drones. Anyway, this is quite a long article and it has quite a lot of detail in it. Now, let's just consider a scenario where the freedom-loving gun owners of America, Alex Jones and many, many others, really dig in against any changes to the laws that would, say, involve some sort of gun buyback, which is indeed what we had in Australia. We actually had a buyback of all the assault weapons in the country. And let's say the gun owners dig in and they say, no, we're not giving our weapons back. And then this basically develops into a confrontation. This could well be the beginning of a serious conflict within the US. It could indeed be the beginning of a civil war. And we see the drones being brought in. So, in fact, it does look to me as if quite possibly we have, you know, the two sides lining up here. But we have a huge contingent of the armed population who probably are ready and willing to take a bullet, to fight to the death. And we have the government and the military-industrial complex, vast corporate oligarchies, bringing in unbelievably powerful technological forces, munitions, massive amounts of weapons, massive amounts of ammunition. I see civil war coming. But I hope it doesn't. I hope we follow another path. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Harold Fenton. It's great to be with you today. We'll be right back after this break with more news and commentary.
so unjust. Children, yeah, I don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. Truth News Radio Australia is an Australian-made grassroots broadcast, and we go out on the Logos Radio Network across the US, a number of cities, mainly Austin and Oklahoma City. And we can also be found on the World Wide Web if you go to truthnews.com.au, and we certainly welcome your visit, and we'd love to get more people visiting the website, leaving comments. I really do enjoy reading comments, and you know, unless they're totally trollish, unless they're just, you know, ad hominem, which I have had a fair bit of in the past, it's extremely valuable. And I don't care whether you agree with me or not. I mean, I care in the sense that I will respond, but it doesn't upset me if you think I'm completely wrong. And I'm always willing to shift my view as new data comes in. And, you know, this whole gun debate is one which, I'm not settled on. I haven't settled on what I think. And I really want to understand the bigger picture. I want to understand what the game players, what the manipulators, what the people with all the money and power might be doing, what they might be up to. And that's why I'm very curious to know why did they have Alex Jones on CNN? They didn't have to do that. They chose to do that. And on one level, you could say, well, it was just maybe for the publicity, because it would draw attention, because Alex is a popular media personality. Yeah, that's all true. But then that's been true on many other subjects as well. Why this specific subject? And who runs CNN? What's their agenda? Is someone trying to foment a conflict in America? Is that what this shooting in Connecticut was all about, which has so many hallmarks of being a false flag, which is enraging people who feel that we haven't got the full story? The families of the kids who were shot not allowed to see the bodies. The emergency service workers not allowed in to attend to the dying. Unheard of. These are very strange and almost deliberate provocations. Again, pure speculation here, and I don't like to speculate, but it does feel like that this was done deliberately. It feels like something was going on here, and the incredible avalanche of media coverage, and then the immediate channeling of that into the decision that there would be changes to the gun laws. And then, of course, knowing that that would cause this massive reaction in the well-armed survivalist preppers and all of those, you know, militias and people like that who really value their right to defend themselves against tyranny. So, you know, where is that headed? I don't know. But what I just wish is that we could recover, restore, reinvigorate that idea of peaceful revolution, which is something that Kennedy talked about so often in his speeches. Peaceful revolution driven by awakened people who've had the illusions taken away, have the scales removed from their eyes, who are able to see things clearly and will be quite firm and resourceful and relentless in their pursuit of truth and justice, but who would never resort to violence. That's what we need. I believe that is really what we need if we're to actually not just repeat the cycle, which we've seen so many times before. Now, In the second hour of today's show, I've got a fantastic interview coming up, which I'd just like to draw your attention to. So please stay with us for the second hour. I have Australian award-winning journalist Chris Graham coming on, and he's going to be talking about the corruption of our media in Australia, the major government taxpayer-funded television network, actually television and radio, called the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, ABC for short. Of course, there's an ABC in the US, but there's no connection. ABC in Australia is a taxpayer-funded government broadcasting corporation. And believe me, they are very well-funded, and it is a very, very high-level, high-quality, you might say, media channel. And by quality, I emphasize that we're talking here about the quality of the impact that they have, the just all of the techniques of a modern media and television network. When you go into their studios, for example, when you go to the filming of the popular current affairs public debate program called Q&A, you see the incredible lavish use of technology and cameras and the work that they do to create a narrative out of every show and to basically filter the audience into to sort of massage the audience response into what they're trying to achieve. This is sophisticated. Unfortunately, it is not quality in terms of adherence to journalistic values, adherence to the facts, adherence to verifiable sources, which is what is the most important thing. And what they claim that they do and what they champion in their charter. In fact, what the ABC does is it constructs narratives for people. It gives people a picture of the world, which is a picture that they create. And quite often, they will just invent factoids to basically inject into their stories to make them fit with the narrative that they've already created. So in the second hour of today's show, I will have Chris Graham, who's a winner of an Walkley Award, very prestigious award here in Australia. And he'll be talking about really a disinformation campaign that was waged by ABC over allegations that people in the Aboriginal communities in Central Australia were involved in extreme violence, sexual violence, predatory sexual behaviour, sexual slavery and paedophilia. All, you know, very, very extreme claims which were aired on a series of ABC Late Line shows. Late Line being a show that comes on at about 11 p.m. at night. And Chris went through the ABC coverage and researched the actual events and found out that a large part of it was completely concocted. And he also discovered some very, very alarming facts, such as that the doctor that was interviewed, who had gone on record as saying that this particular individual had been engaging in very, very wicked behaviour with young women, this very same doctor had been prescribing Viagra to this man for 3 years, and then subsequent doctors continued to do that. That again, just highlights an incredibly strange corruption and sort of confluence of pharmaceutical monopolies, the medical tyranny that we live under, and the actual abuse that does occur. There's an interconnection there. The use of these drugs certainly would increase someone's sexual tendencies, and if someone already had aberrant sexual behaviour, to be giving this person drugs to increase their sexual performance, it's just you can't explain it unless you understand the grip that we're in under this kind of medical scientific tyranny that really doesn't care about people at all. It wants to sell drugs. It wants to create certain agendas. It wants to control people, but it doesn't really want to help people. And then you combine that with a media that is there to set an agenda as well. And of course, in this case, the media was setting an agenda, which was taken up by the government within a very short period of time when they launched what was known as the Northern Territory Intervention. And this was essentially martial law. I mean, this was actually the military coming in to remote communities and basically taking over and rolling back people's basic civil rights, going into families, taking kids away, a complete totalitarian military crackdown and obliteration of people's basic rights and civil liberties. And of course, the Aboriginal groups rightly see this as another example of racism, which goes back many, many hundreds of years in this country to the origins of our British colony here. But I see it also as a taste of things to come, and I see it as a testing ground for things that will be done in the future to us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, right back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio. Well, in the last section of the first hour today, I'd just like to move on and to consider an article here written by Joanne Nova from joannenova.com.au. Joanne, one of Australia's prominent climate change skeptics, and indeed one of the world's prominent climate change skeptics, with one of the most popular blogs on the subject of climate change in the world, and she's constantly writing content and constantly giving people new angles and new ways of looking at the key questions about climate. And her husband is David Evans, a former employee of the Department of Climate Change, a scientist and an expert in climate modelling. And together they're a very powerful scientific duo, because Joanne has a strong scientific background as well and was formerly a member of the Greens, I might add. So she also has credentials as an environmentalist, but she's an environmentalist who realised that she was being conned, realised that the Green movement was somehow overrun or subverted or infiltrated by forces that were using it to push an agenda, which was really an agenda of big business and banking, you know, with carbon trading. It all became focused on this carbon trading schemes. And she got out of it. She left the Greens. Her husband, who had been doing thinking of his own, realised that, in fact, the major central claims of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, were based on bad science, and he's critiqued that. And if you put David Evans into Google, you will find some really excellent interviews he's given on why some of the key scientific principles that are fundamental to the mainstream view on climate change are actually wrong. But what I want to read to you here is a little bit from an article titled 2 Million Years of Climate Change Made Us What We Are. 2 Million Years of Climate Change Made Us Human. In a yin meets yang contradiction where climate change destroyed cultures and groups, but without it, we would not be who we are. The brutal forces of nature tested our ancestors with droughts, storms, floods, and tidal surges. But if the climate had stayed the same, would we have had Bach, Leonardo, and Newton? At the end of the day, we have a civilization that allows millions of people to pursue happiness without fear that they will die of dysentery, be murdered by marauding barbarians, or lose their children to slave traders. And she goes on to document some well-researched books and articles that show extreme climate change in the past. Rapid climate changes occurred 2 million years ago. Some swings occurred so fast that they happened in hundreds of years, as little as 10 generations in the Olduvai Gorge area, Olduvai Gorge being one of the cradles of humanity in Ethiopia, in Africa. And we do have a quote here from one of the papers, and I don't actually have the source for you, but I'm just going to read here briefly before we run to the end of today's show. A series of rapid environmental changes in East Africa, roughly 2 million years ago, may be responsible for driving human evolution, according to researchers at Penn State and Rutgers University. The landscape early humans were inhabiting transitioned rapidly back and forth between a closed woodland and an open grassland about 5 to 6 times during a period of 200,000 years, said Clayton McGill, a graduate student in geosciences at Penn State. These changes happened very abruptly, with each transition occurring over hundreds to just a few thousand years. It was not a slow progression of climate or one big change. It was rapid swings back and forward. There is a view this time in Africa was the Great Drying, when the environment slowly dried out over 3 million years. But our data showed that it was not a grand progression towards drier. The environment was highly variable. The changes happened at the same time we started using tools. The researchers say that they show that the environment changed dramatically over a short time, and this variability coincides with an important period in human evolution when the genus Homo was first established and when there was first evidence of tool use. And this was all driven by planetary changes. The orbit of the Earth around the Sun slowly changes with time. These changes were tied to the local climate at the Olduvai Gorge through changes in the monsoon system in Africa. Slight changes in the amount of sunshine change the intensity of atmospheric circulation and the supply of water. The rain patterns that drive the plant patterns follow this monsoon circulation. We found a correlation between changes in the environment and planetary movement. So the point here is to show that extremes of climate and changes of climate have been very important, will certainly coincide. We can't immediately infer a causation there, but it's a very interesting subject to pursue further. Further on from the article here, a study suggests a 1,500-year-long mega drought killed off the original Australians. A beautiful, mysterious form of Aboriginal art disappeared 7,000 years ago from the remote Kimberley region of far northwestern Australia. The art that replaced it 3,000 years later was very different and not as complex. And the reason the original artist stopped making the Bradshaw style of painting has been a mystery. Now, again, what's interesting here is that and of course, we could probably cite many, many examples of radical changes in climate that have pushed humanity in different directions. And we accept that. We accept that as being our history, our reality. But with this whole new phase of civilization that we're moving into now, with this idea of total control, this idea has developed that that the climate must be set to a certain number. It's like your oven. It's got to be on, 180 degrees, or, it's got to be at that thermostat. Otherwise, everything's going to fall apart. And this is such a ridiculous presumption that it has no relevance, no parallel in the whole history of the planet, where we just see constant change, constant cycles from ice ages to very warm interglacials to mega droughts. And yet there is something in all this. There is some kind of underlying philosophy, I believe, that is driving the idea that everything in our world must be controlled, that everything in our world must fall under some, umbrella of a bureaucratic, corporatized system of pseudo-democracy. Pseudo in the sense that it's never really what the people want. It's just what a group of bureaucrats or people who might call themselves, the enlightened ones, perhaps the Illuminati, want for us. It's a totalitarian system, and that appears to be what we are actually migrating back to, with a whole range of trends that we see in science and politics. Now, just returning to this subject of the mega drought in Australia, correlation is not causation. Peter Veth, a professor and chair in Kimberley Rock Art at the University of Western Australia, disagrees that the drought caused the death of these prehistoric people. He critiques the research paper for its argument about how the simultaneous changes in climate patterns and art styles reveal the collapse of a culture. The cultural explanation they've put forward about it being the demise of one culture and the beginning of another are fundamentally flawed. Peter explains that archaeology from occupation sites throughout the Kimberley suggests Aboriginal habitation from about 45,000 years ago until the present. They have a coincidence, a gap in the pollen record that fits into what is thought to be the change from two different art forms. But to suggest that you've had the death of a pre-Aboriginal culture and then the migration of a new people is totally unsupported. A change in art style does not equate with a new people or a crash. Graphic switches occur in the art of Aboriginal Australia in many places. Well, that's just basically to illustrate that we don't really know about what mega events occurred in history, really how they affected humanity. Everything that we do is guesses, sometimes good guesses, sometimes well-reasoned guesses, but the reality is change, and change always creates new art, new culture, new directions. And so if we could get the dialogue to think about that more, instead of just this endless sort of listen to the scientists, listen to the men in the white coats, they're telling us the world's about to end, the planet's got too hot, this, and we've got to stop doing this and we've got to do something else. It's just the language of control. It's not the language of truth. It's not the language of freedom. We reach the end of the hour. We'll be right back with Chris Graham for a really important interview in the second hour. Don't go away.